Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, February 21st, 2018. Civil society activists called on the IGAD mediators to put more pressure on warring parties to compromise.
Besides the external pressure, it's very important that as citizens we generate the equal, you know, internal pressure that will let our leaders know that it cannot be business as usual.
And the former political detainees threatened to pull out of the transitional government of national unity if the next phase of talks fails.
Should these talks fail, this is going to be purely an arrangement that brings Salva and Taban together. Lamu Akol has already pulled out. Riek Machar has been bumped out of Juba. The former detainees are going to pull out.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A coalition of more than 200 civil society groups that call themselves the South Sudan Civil Society Forum is urging the regional bloc IGAD, the African Union and the international community to put more pressure on South Sudan's warring parties to end conflict ahead of the next phase of peace talks. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
In a joint statement issued Tuesday, the coalition called on the mediators and international community to take punitive measures against the parties who violated the cessation of hostilities agreement signed in December. Geoffrey Lord Duke is a spokesperson for the South Sudan Civil Society Forum.
We noted that significant time was wasted both in walkouts and relegating contentious issues to the last minute. We hope that the next phase will be the final phase.
Government and opposition delegates spent nearly 2 weeks in Addis Ababa talking about how to improve implementation of the August 2015 peace deal. Under the timetable released by IGAD mediators earlier this month, the parties were supposed to have struck a deal by February 17th, but the talks broke down late last week with the government and opposition delegation blaming each other. Duke says while some progress was made on security discussions, no agreement was reached on governance. He says the warring parties spent too much time on power sharing. Koiti Emily was one of the representatives of the youth at the High-Level Revitalization Forum in Addis Ababa. She says the IGAD mediators need to do a better job.
All of them have contributed either directly or indirectly to the situation we have, and they have to be constantly reminded that it's from that angle that they should be approaching the negotiation. From remorsefulness that indeed they ought to fix this situation and clean the mess that they've created for us in this country.
Duke says he and other civil society activists expect the next phase of talks to end in a final peace deal.
Bodies like IGAD and African Union gave strong statements urging the parties to respect the ceasefire agreement or face punitive measures. And we urge these bodies and the broader international community to not only keep it at words, but move beyond words to action if the parties violate the agreement, the cessation of hostilities agreement again.
Duke is calling on CITISAM, the body tasked by IGAD, to investigate ceasefire violations to swiftly point out spoilers for punitive measures.
We urge our citizens world over to join us in identifying the spoilers of peace. We will categorically designate any party that violates the cessation of hostilities agreement as an enemy of peace.
Emily says the parties are far from making compromises on sticky issues.
Besides the external pressure, it's very important that as citizens we generate the equal, you know, internal pressure that will let our leaders know that it cannot be business as usual.
The civil society activist says South Sudan's leaders have tainted the country's image for too long. She and other activists are calling on all South Sudanese to work together to end violence in their country. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The former SPLM political detainees are threatening to pull out of the transitional government of national unity if the third phase of the high-level revitalization forum fails to end the political crisis in South Sudan. South Sudan's former deputy defense minister, Majak Dagot, says South Sudan needs what he calls a clean page. He says the opposition must speak with one voice to challenge the Kiir administration to end the 4 years of instability in the country.
And I think you can easily squeeze the government and make their position really quite untenable if the opposition had a united voice. The biggest problem of the opposition is that they speak in what I call the cacophony of voices, which is not making the message sing to our people. All that we need at this stage is to get our get our country out of the quagmire.
And talking about this opposition not having a united voice, it's a reflection of the individuals in the mix. Would you say the opposition is having credible leaders who can take South Sudan to the next stage?
The problem of leadership in the opposition, like in any social organization, is a problem, no doubt about that. But the biggest issue as we speak is that the way most of these opposition groups were formed, they were formed as a response, as a reaction to oppression by Juba, which you can define as ethnically or regionally driven ideology of trying to exclude other South Sudanese, of trying to oppress other South Sudanese and to put them in the position of disadvantage. The oppressed, on the other hand, did not do well because they responded with the same instruments and tools that the oppressor is using to disadvantage them. And this is what has caused a problem with most of the opposition groups, because they are sectarian-based, they are ethnic-based, they are regional-based, they have narrow vision of the country. They don't have a broader outlook about what the future of South Sudan should look like. Theirs is just a reaction, a response to the oppression by Juba. And they are using exactly the same tools. This is what has made it very difficult for the opposition for the last 5 years since 2013 to get together. But then people are learning their lesson. They can fare better if they only work for the change of the current situation and embark on building their unity and building their peace and building their future.
And what is your prediction of phase three of the high-level revitalization? It looks like the issues of governance and security sector reforms is going to dominate the talks. What is your prediction? Do you see any hope?
Well, these two chapters in the agreement, chapter one on governance, chapter two on permanent ceasefire and security arrangements, are terribly fractured. And the whole idea of revitalization is premised on reconstructing these two chapters by way of generating new understanding and new agreement around some of the issues concerning permanent ceasefire and security and the new governance architecture. Part of it, for us to have that new governance architecture, we are coming up with this idea of a hybrid administration of technocrats and politicians of good moral standing in the society. In any event, the talks are going to center about this in the next phase. Whether there is going to be an agreement, that's another thing. Maybe we'll be able to talk again about the aftermath of phase three. But what I can assure you, as far as we are concerned, as former political detainees, you know that we have a small component of two ministers who are participating as part of this government in Juba. And before we have talked about the logic why we wanted them to continue, because the idea was to save peace when the hostilities were resumed by the two warring parties in 2016 July. But mind you, should these talks fail, this is going to be purely an arrangement that brings Salva and Taban together. Lamakol has already pulled out. Riek Machar has been bumped out of Juba. The former detainees are going to pull out.
That's Majak Dagot, former South Sudan Deputy Defense Minister and member of the SPLM former detainees. He was speaking to me from our studio in Nairobi earlier today. Kenya is warning its citizens against traveling to several areas in South Sudan affected by conflict over the past 6 months. The travel warning comes after two Kenyan pilots who were detained by rebels in a Kobo area of Greater Upper Nile were released yesterday. Gift Friday reports for VOA from Juba.
According to Kenyan Foreign Affairs Ministry, the advisory applies to parts of the Greater Upper Nile region, particularly Bie, Lajor, Akobo, Jonglei, Northern Lekki states, including sections of Mawit, Eastern Nile, and Boma states, and Yei River state. South Sudan Foreign Affairs Ministry spokesman Mawen Makol Arik says the government of South Sudan facilitated the release of the two Kenyan pilots. He says it is the responsibility of the government to help foreigners who are facing insecurity in South Sudan.
They need to be vigilant when they go and those areas. It is our duty as a government to be telling them generally the country is safe for them to do their business, and we are responsible to protect their lives and property.
South Sudan Foreign Affairs spokesman Mawen Makol says Kenya has the right to issue any kind of travel warning in South Sudan.
They have the right to alert their citizens, but also we are telling them that the government is in charge and we are in control, and that the citizens, including the foreigners, are protected by the government.
Muso Cheno is a Kenyan who lives in Juba. He says the release of the pilots signals a good relationship between the two countries.
It is a great thing that we really appreciate. And also in regard to the diplomatic issues that would relate to this matter between Kenya and South Sudan, now that a release has come and they are safe, they are in sound health, we really appreciate that the ties between Kenya and South Sudan would always remain clear without any issues regarding to this matter that befell our two brothers.
The two pilots were detained for a month by rebels of the SPLM-IO loyal to Riek Machar. One person was killed and several cattle were killed when the Kenyan plane crashed, landed in a Kobo area last month. The pilots were released on Tuesday. Ocheno says the South Sudan government must do more to ensure that Kenyans and other nationals working in the country are safe.
The governance of South Sudan has to do a lot of things to ensure that people are secure and the nation is secure and there is general political stability.
Charles Ocheno is the chairperson of Association of Kenyans Living in South Sudan. Charles says they will send a message to other Kenyans living in South Sudan.
We are really appreciating the efforts of the government of Kenya through our embassy that is seated in South Sudan, because we were really worried about their lives, but they have really managed it, and we have now secured our brothers.
Gift Friday for VOA News, Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, internal displaced persons in Jonglei State are encouraged to return to their home. More on that story after this break.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your favorite cultural tradition and why?
When in the evening, people used to sit together when we were small. Elders, you know, in the evening, they share stories. You know, they tell us past histories. They tell us events that happened during their period, during their time.
What I love about the tradition of the Hausas or Fulanis is the way they wear their clothes. The clothes we use, the atamfaya. There's this Asian tradition of the Hausas, it's like two different wrappers, you tie one and you cover up yourself with one. I love that one.
I love my culture, and so all activities, I like them. So there's no particular one I can say I like and this one I don't like. So there's no favorite.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Jonglei State Governor Philip Aguer has ordered people who have taken over houses of internally displaced people who fled to seek protection at the UN camp in Bor to immediately vacate those houses to allow the owners to return to their houses. Manyang David Mayar has the story for VOA from Bor.
2,000 South Sudanese have been residing in the UN Protection of Civilian Site in Bor since 2013, when fighting erupted in Juba and spread to Bor, displacing thousands of families. Jonglei State Governor Philip Aguer says citizens living in the POC sites have the right to take back their houses once they choose to leave the UN site and resettle back home.
We have ordered those who are staying in the plots of others or in the houses of other people to vacate, and I believe the law will not allow anybody to occupy a house of somebody who is not around.
Before Jonglei State was divided by presidential decree into five states, Bor was the state capital and inhabited by a number of different communities. In 2017, the Jonglei was divided and many communities found themselves in newly created states. Governor Aguer says South Sudanese have the right to live anywhere, regardless of their states.
South Sudan is one country. We are not in apartheid South Africa. We are in a free South Sudan. So any South Sudanese is free to own a land. Anybody from Akobo, from Malakal is free to have a land here in Bor, even if the state is divided.
Speaking in Nuer, Nyakwat Chol, who lives at a POC site in Bor, says families who had land in town should be able to take back their properties peacefully.
I heard of one lady called Mary Nyatha who went to the town and reclaimed her plot of land. She found some people occupying it and she was able to discuss with them. Those residing on the land told her that they are ready to leave the land if she is willing to come back to her house.
Speaking in Arabic, POC resident Stephen Diou says although he feels it is safe to return home, he needs some help from aid agencies.
The only thing that is preventing us from returning home is the problem of food. I don't have work and there is nothing I can eat outside. That is why we remain here, because there is a food ratio given to us here by UN.
Atim Biar is a Bor resident who supports the call for illegal occupants to make room for rightful owners in the POC.
Let those people come back to their various places. So there's no any problem again. So I can say let those Nuer or whatever, let them come back to their various places. Because we are all Sudanese and the fighting all the time is not good. If I am from somebody's place, I can take my thing and go and allow that person to come to his place.
Governor Aguirre says many people from POC side prefer to return to their hometowns. He says his government has helped facilitate the return of more than 300 people living in the POC sites to Fangak and Bia estates. For VOA News, I'm Manyang David Mayar in Bor.
Today is the 94th birthday of former Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe, who ruled the country for 37 years before being forced to resign last year by the military. Yesterday, President Emmerson Mnangagwa declared today Robert Gabriel Mugabe Youth Day and a public holiday. Tabang Nare is a Zimbabwean civil society activist. He tells VOA's James Batty that there are other Zimbabweans who played key roles in founding of the nation, and those birthdays could have also been celebrated as a national holiday.
It looks like this is going to be a low-key event. This is going to be a low-key event where, really, the celebration is not clear how it's going to be celebrated.
But, Tabang, we can say that although President Mugabe served the country for 37 years and there was some criticism about the way he led the country, you can argue that he is the founding father of the modern Zimbabwe. So don't you think he deserves his holiday being celebrated as a public holiday?
Some people don't feel at ease. Robert Mugabe is not the only founding father in Zimbabwe. I'm sure there are people like Joshua Nkomo who played a role. There are people like Josiah Tongogara, Lookout Masuku, Sidney Malunga. There are so many Zimbabweans. And there's a contestation really about, you know, the good that Robert Mugabe did and the bad that he did. You know, so we, as a country, we are still trying to resolve and understand where exactly we place Robert Mugabe. Because as it is, it would seem he still is in some form of house arrest. You know, his movement is sort of managed. You know, we didn't even see him make a speech about the passing on of Mr. Tsvangirai. And we know that Joyce Mujuru, who went out to visit him, appears to have been censured for that visit. You know, so Robert Mugabe's legacy is one that needs to be cleansed and that is currently contested.
I was reading an article by this activist, Pastor Evan Mawere, making a comment in Geneva that on Tuesday that he thinks that the upcoming elections will not be free and fair. I wonder, is too early to say that, or do you think he has a point?
I think clearly there are issues around the capacity of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission. We know in terms of the commissioners themselves, you know, the deputy commissioner and other commissioners served in the previous commission that supervised the 2013 elections, or some of them were appointed thereafter. And we know in terms of independence that they are not really independent. So while we have a new judge, Chikumba, who is the chair of the Electoral Commission, in terms of capacity, Zimbabwe Electoral Commission does not have the capacity to carry out a free and fair election. I think we also need to see the voters' role. We need to see the state broadcaster ZBC affording all political parties access to, you know, media, you know, access to airtime on radio and TV. So the playing field is still not level as we speak in Zimbabwe.
Taban, thank you very much again. So nice to talk with you always.
Pleasure, James. Thank you.
That's Taban Nair, a Zimbabwean who works with civil society groups. He was speaking with VOA's James Batty from the U.S. city of Dallas, Texas. Political parties in Cameroon have set an ambitious goal ahead of this year's poll to put women in all 30% of elected offices. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
An all-female orchestra plays as 300 women selected from associations around Cameroon campaign in markets, universities, and popular spots in the capital, asking women to register to vote. 29-year-old fish seller Clarice Kongyu says she agreed to register because the women convinced her that with hard work, she might even one day be on the ballot.
We can be able to do what a man can do, to be given posts that the world feels that it's only for men. There are women who are mechanics. There are women who are driving caterpillars and all the like. But at first they thought that that was just the job of a man. The problem is that some of the women are not pushed for. They are like sleeping.
Cameroon will be having a series of important elections this year, local, parliamentary, and presidential. Political parties, including the main opposition SDF and the ruling CPDM, have taken public commitments to achieve a UN-established benchmark of at least 30% female representation. The government has echoed the commitment, calling on parties to put forth an adequate number of female candidates. The first election of the year is the senatorial, scheduled for March 25th. To meet the gender goal, women would need to win at least 20 of the 70 senatorial seats up for grabs, while President Paul Biya would have to include women among the 30 senators that the Constitution calls on him to appoint. Observers say the odds of success are long, at least in the short term. Cameroon has 386 mayors. Just 26 are women. In the National Assembly, women occupy one-third of the seats in the lower house, while the upper house is just 20% women. Female members of the ruling CPDM party say women should not be discouraged. Senator Julian Janku of Cameroon's far north region says many women are not able to participate in decision-making because of traditional misconceptions and early marriage, which derails their education.
On pensait que quand tu es chrétien, tu ne vas faire la politique. On s'est rapproché du cardinal.
She says she did not believe it when men in her community said the Bible prohibits women from participating in politics, and so she went to seek advice from the highest member of the Roman Catholic Church in Cameroon, Cardinal Christian Toumi. She says he told her that politics was for both men and women. But some male politicians argue women aren't ready and that Cameroon needs to get more women to vote before it can get more women in office. Women constitute 52% of the country's population. Yet, according to official figures, women account for just 30% of the 7 million people registered to vote in this year's polls. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
That report by Kinzeka from Yaoundé brings us to the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Nebni Baledna by Emmanuel Kembe. That one is a patriotic song. We have been listening to Emmanuel Kembe with the song Taalu Nabni Belet. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Would like to hear what you think about this show. You can reach us at southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.